I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to continue the conversation the Indiana General Assembly seems determined to avoid. We will talk about the question of adding civil rights protections into state law for LGBT citizens, in this case, specifically transgender citizens, who have emerged as a point of contention in legislative battles. My guests are Indiana Representative Ed Clear, a Republican who introduced a bill protecting the rights of intersex children, and Melissa Bickle, parent of a transgendered child. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to continue a conversation that we have had largely about the kind of conversation the Indiana General Assembly and the governor seem disposed to avoid right now. And it is about really protecting the rights of LGBT citizens here in the state, balancing those obviously with the religious freedoms of others. Specifically here, we're going to talk about the protection of the rights of intersex or transgender children and adults here in Indiana. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Representative Ed Clear. He's a Republican from New Albany who introduced a bill that was designed to protect the rights of intersex children, and Melissa Bickle, who's an advocate and mother of a transgender teen. Welcome to both of you. It's good to have you here.
Thank you, John.
Thank you. Good to be with you, John.
So I'm going to start, Representative Clear, with you. First, tell people what the bill, which, you know, is dead right now, but was an interesting attempt to explore an issue that the state, you know, so far is not grappling with. Could you talk first about what the bill would do and then the intellectual journey, really, that you went through to get to the point of introducing it?
Sure. Well, thank you again for having this topic today. The bill, for anybody who wants to check it out online, is House Bill 1242. And as you said, it is dead now, but the text of the bill is still available online if anyone would like to take a look at it. And the General Assembly website is just iga.in.gov. And I don't know if maybe you could provide a link from the show site as well.
We'll put it on Facebook.
Great.
We'll put it on our Facebook page.
Because I know some folks might be interested to look at the actual text of the bill. Mm-hmm. But it was actually an NPR story that brought this issue to my attention last year, and that led me to an Atlantic Monthly magazine article from, I believe, 2014 about a South Carolina case involving adoptive parents of an intersex, a child with an intersex condition. And
We probably ought to define what intersex is for listeners who aren't as versed in this as
sure.
We are.
Good point. And I'll be the first to say that I don't claim to be a medical or scientific expert, so this is from a layperson's perspective. But my understanding is that an intersex condition is essentially the presence of both male and female characteristics or ambiguous characteristics, either in genitalia or chromosomal expression or other characteristics that are used to determine gender.
Okay. And I'm sorry, I did interrupt. I want you to continue on. It was the Atlantic, and then why did you – the bill was really pretty specific in its aims.
Yeah, and the bill, I wrote it very narrowly. It only would have applied to children in state custody. Based on what I've read just in the Atlantic article and the NPR piece and some other articles that I've read, Experts estimate that about one out of every 2,000 children is born with an intersex condition. So it's, you know, if you look at the number of births every year in Indiana, you know, I think I did the math. Don't hold me to this, but I think I computed maybe about 50 people a year in Indiana born with an intersex condition. Some percentage of those would be in state custody, statistically. And basically, the bill said that the state could not cause surgical procedures or other therapies that would affect gender, gender differentiation, unless it was medically necessary, and that only after the child had reached a level of maturity as determined by a physician and a psychologist could any kind of gender differentiation procedure take place.
Okay. And you had a even though that is a worthy subject in and of itself, there was a larger purpose or agenda, a different kind of conversation you were trying to force there, right?
Absolutely. I think the issue is an important issue on its own merits, recognizing that there are Hoosiers born every year, some in state custody with this condition. But I was hoping that it would become part of the larger LGBT discussion at the State House, and that it might even help elevate the discussion. We've heard a lot about the potty police, and I think it's
you need to trademark that phrase.
Well, I didn't coin it, but it's a term that that's been thrown around quite a bit, and I think it's unfortunate that you know, the discussion over what is really a very complex set of medical and scientific issues, you know, has at least by some been relegated to fear-mongering over men and women's restrooms and just a lot of stereotypes and misinformation. So this bill was, I thought it may provide an opportunity to elevate that discussion and talk about some of the science and medicine involved in gender.
Now, Melissa, this is more than an issue for you. It's real life. I mean, this is your family's story. You are the parent of a transgender
Male to female.
Male to female.
Yes.
Okay. How old?
She's 13 years old.
She's 13 years old.
An eighth grader.
Okay.
Yes.
An eighth grader. And we're not going to identify her or anything like that.
I know.
That, but,
I accidentally went with her name on accident.
You know, we'll do what we can to protect that. We're all adults and we choose to be out here advancing our views. We'd like to preserve children.
Yes.
You know, if she wants to come back here at 18 and do and do this show, she can. So talk to me a little bit about your story and your daughter's story.
Okay.
You know, because that is a journey, you know, as Representative Clear has made clear, and as Senator Holdman, who was on the show just a week ago, talking about the demise of Senate Bill 344, which would have offered some civil rights protections. You know, he made it clear that there was, to use Representative Clear's word, a lot of fear-mongering about this.
Yes.
I think to the degree that we can get past the fear and the caricatures, we're rendering a public service. So talk to me a little bit about your daughter.
Okay. She is an eighth grader, and we live in Franklin Township. Mm-hmm. She came to us almost 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and She left us a note in my car. She knew I would be getting up early and taking her brother to day camp, and she left a notebook in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And inside was two pictures. Mm-hmm. One was a drawing of a male,
mm-hmm.
and one of a female. And she said, "It said, this is who I am, and this is who I need to be."
Mm-hmm.
So I got in the car. I drove my son, and I thought, I was a little freaked out. It's scary. It's you know, I didn't really know what to think right then. I went home. I talked to her, and she told me she's always felt like she was a girl. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you know, why haven't you told us until now? And just like anything, this is a scary thing to tell people, even if you know that they'll be supportive.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you don't know. You don't know how people will react. For me, it made sense. For me, it was, oh, that's it. I always knew there was something, my husband and I both always knew there was something special about our child. We just couldn't put our finger on it.
Mm-hmm.
And this was our answer. So from there, lots of research. Trans parents have to go, it's mm-hmm. it's like 0 to 100 because you have to do lots of research, figure it out. We immediately said we would support her, and we did. But we went for about a year where she went to 7th grade, and we just kind of at home referred to her as female and quickly realized she was not going to let it just stay like that. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to. I was scared. Mm-hmm. I was scared as a parent. My thoughts are, who's going to hurt her? Is mm-hmm. she going to be okay? Are people going to, I don't know, talk about her, bully her? It was scary. It was my fears. She mm-hmm. was ready to go. She was ready to live her life.
Let me ask this, and I would invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. I hesitate to ask you to put words into her mouth.
Okay.
But because she isn't here and all of that. I mean, I can't imagine the process first of having that kind of conversation with her parents. What was the process for her in working up to the point where she could leave you that note, know that she was starting the conversation?
She told me that a couple of times, like 2 years prior, mm-hmm. she got up the courage, and then she just couldn't do it. She said she just, even though she knows that we support the rights of all people and always have, and that's how mm-hmm. we live in our house, she was just afraid. So she just said that finally, she said she had to do it. Mm-hmm. She couldn't live like this anymore. She couldn't be her male self anymore. She had to live the life that she was supposed to live. My husband and I discussed a lot of things, and we wanted this for her. We wanted to help her. Like I said, this is something that we always knew there was something. We just didn't know what it was. It was an answer for us.
And how, in terms of the coming out process for her, what were the responses from other people? You know, what sort of reactions did the news?
Well, during that year that I said we were kind of living at our house mm-hmm. in her life and not in public yet, we were able to talk to a lot of folks in our family, friends, let them know that this is happening. And we were able to get some medical help, talk to people. And at the end of the year, when we came out, we had super positive responses from the people that we associated with. We only had maybe one that wasn't.
We've gotten a question via Twitter from a listener named Terry. If you'd like to reach out to us on Twitter, you can find us at WFYI. Terry says, the children in state custody, does that mean in foster homes, orphanages, because they are intersex, or is it just circumstances that they were either in foster care? Not that the intersex isn't the defining thing there.
No, I think it would be a child who is in state custody and happens to be intersex. I don't think a child would...
They weren't put in state custody.
Yeah, they wouldn't be put in state custody.
Because they were intersex. It's more that an assertion that the state can't make that kind of determination for a human being.
Exactly. No, there's nothing in the bill that would say that a child would be put into state custody. These are children who are already in state custody.
Did the and the bill, I presume, it didn't get a hearing, right?
Correct. It was assigned to the Family, Children, and Human Affairs Committee and did not receive a hearing.
Okay. If you are just joining us, we are talking about the rights and protection of intersex or transgender children and adults here in Indiana. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Representative Ed Clear. He's a Republican from New Albany who introduced a bill that attempted to protect the rights of intersex children, and Melissa Bickle, who is the mother of a transgender teen. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the rights of intersex and transgender children and adults here in Indiana. My guests are Representative Ed Clear. He's a Republican from New Albany who introduced a bill protecting the rights of intersex children, and Melissa Bickle, who is an advocate and mother of a transgender teen. Sorry, I cannot talk. That's an obstacle here on radio. If you would like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what a listener named Ron has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Ron, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a tough question, and it involves, I'm sure one of your panelists has heard about it. I think it's a transgender 13-year-old boy. I'm thinking he's in Michigan. And he is becoming a she, and mm-hmm. she is, the school has made accommodations for her to play on the girls' teams. They've also made accommodations for her to have a separate shower area. But she has decided with her attorney that that's not enough, that she should also be able to shower with the girls. That's my question. When does the rights of one person start to infringe on the rights of another person? And how do you guarantee that that's not going to happen down the road?
Thanks very much for the call and the question. We'll try to get an answer. Melissa, I'll give you the first crack at that one.
I would just say she does identify as a female, and I don't know what kind of rights that would be impending on. I don't know what she would be doing to hurt other people. She's just wanting to take a shower. She's just wanting to go to the bathroom. That's it. And she identifies as a female, and she should be able to shower and go to the restroom where she identifies.
What is it? Representative Clear, you're around the political arena. But these sorts of questions, the showers, the bathrooms, or whatever, do seem to be the flashpoint here. What is it about transgender people that creates that level of anxiety, approaching fear, if not fear, actually? It's probably.
Right. I think there's a lot less understanding about gender issues, mm-hmm. transgender people. Than some of the other components of the LGBT discussion. So there's been a growing acceptance of sexual orientation, mm-hmm. But the acceptance of transgender people doesn't seem to be keeping pace with that. And I think a lot of it goes back to we used the term fear-mongering earlier. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of that. And not to be, insensitive to anyone, I think that's why it's so important that, that we have a high-level discussion about these issues. I think they can be resolved. And the more we get away from the fear-mongering and the misinformation and begin to talk about gender issues in a scientific and medical context, the easier it will be to confront some of the some of the societal issues.
What's the biggest, Melissa, as the mother of a transgender teen, what is the biggest misconception people have about transgender people?
I think some people like to attach weirdness, freakness, different things. I think there's a lot of ignorance. I think the bathroom makes people just jumpy for some reason when they have this 6-foot-2 man in a black hoodie going in the bathroom and hurting your little girls and your wives and your mothers. The truth is, anyone can go into a bathroom. There's no, bouncer at the bathroom door.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, transgender folks just want to go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Well, it's not just a question of desire. Right. There's need involved there,
right,
too. We all
right.
have to.
They just have to go to the bathroom, exactly. And they should be able to go to the bathroom.
But I guess what I'm trying to
right.
get to here is, yes, there are difficulties. And while we have become more accepting
okay.
as a society, and I realize I'm walking through a minefield of language here right now because
misconceptions.
Yeah, well, I guess what I do not want to demean anyone anywhere
sure.
by saying that they should be simply accepted. That it
sure.
seems to suggest a level of talk, but the concern, the sort of opposition to other parts of the LGBT discussion, the LGB part of that, lesbian, gay, and bisexual, doesn't seem to arouse the same level of concern
mm-hmm.
that the trend. And what is the difference?
I really don't know. For me, I guess they're just focused on what's in their pants. I mean, their gender. They're focused on their assigned gender, and that's not what it is. Gender's in your brain. The misconceptions about transgender folks, I think that they, I don't really know. I just know that I know so many transgender people from 4 to 64 that are working really hard, paying taxes, business owners, getting great grades in school, tons of great folks out there. And I think there's a misconception that they're not a contributing member of our society. And they are. They're regular people that just want regular rights, just like you and I, not special rights, but regular rights.
Representative Clare, I mean, same question to you. What do you think it is that separates this from the rest of this discussion?
Oh, I think it's a variety of issues. I think it goes back to old stereotypes, and that's a lot of it. I think with the LGB part of the equation, we're talking about expression. With the T, we're getting into physical characteristics, which there may be a different comfort zone for some folks with the first three letters, and that last letter is more threatening, as in the case the caller cited, where a teenage girl or a teenager is possibly using a locker room that some folks feel is inappropriate because of that child's physical characteristics, and the caller didn't obviously get into that, but I think that's part of it. But I really think a lot of it is just stereotypes and the lack of familiarity with transgender people and with gender issues in general.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Tricia. If you want to reach out to us via email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Tricia says, "Hi, this is absolutely fantastic. So glad you are discussing this issue. I would like to ask Melissa, what happens once your child tells you he or she is trans, as far as who you talk to, how you come out,
okay.
etc.? Great question, Tricia. Thank you very much for bringing it in."
Thanks, Tricia. I would say that for us, we went to we had a psychologist that we talked to. We went to our school. We talked to our principal. We talked to our guidance counselor. We talked to all kinds of people in our family, like I said. But just the people that would be a part of my daughter's everyday life. The principal didn't really flinch at all, didn't bat an eye. And he really wasn't very versed on transgender folks. He didn't know a lot about it. But he said, she's a member. She's a student at our school, and everybody counts and everybody matters. And he started researching a little bit, and they make sure that she's fine every day. And but yeah, the school and the counselors, because they need to talk to somebody. We made sure that we were there for her, because the foundation, your parents' support for transgender folks is huge.
Mm-hmm.
It's really big.
Well, it's huge. Your parents' support is
absolutely
huge for any child. But
absolutely.
That's, yeah.
But the suicide rates for kids that don't have that parental support
is
way higher.
How much? What do you know the numbers?
I think the number is 40s maybe. But it's really high.
Boy.
It's really high.
So almost one in two?
It's pretty high.
Yeah, that's very high.
And I don't quote me on that, but
okay. It's
really high. And I see it. I see kids, they're depressed, they're anxious, they're suicidal. When parents aren't supportive of their children. And I hope that if there are parents out there listening and they are having, their child has talked to them about being transgender, I hope that they would seek. We have all kinds of resources in Indiana. We do.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the circumstances and the rights of intersex or transgender children and adults here in Indiana. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Autumn has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Autumn, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Well, I just had a question for Melissa also. You said that when your daughter told you, a lot of things made sense. Like, in retrospect, looking back, what were some of the things that made sense to you and kind of proved that this wasn't just a phase, or perhaps that your son was just more feminine than normal?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Autumn.
Thanks, Autumn. I would say there were times my children had a Wii, game console, the Wii.
Mm-hmm.
And on the Wii, you make Miis, the little people. And she used to make everyone's Mi in the opposite gender when she was little. This was first, second grade. And I think it was a way for her to express herself without telling everyone how she really felt. And she even named her Mi the name that we would have named her had she been assigned female at birth. Many things. She always liked female toys, I guess. Girl toys, but I don't really like that term. She liked wearing hair. She liked to make hair for herself. There were all kinds of things that we look back on. But the Wii's and the Mi, that was a pretty big one.
I'm interested by your reference that gender is in the mind, too, because it does strike me that so much of this conversation focuses on the genitalia, and a lot of this is about how you're hardwired to look at the world.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, my wife and I tried to do with both of our children. We've got a girl and a boy, non-gender specific, and you know what we discovered is that you know, with our daughter, If she was given a toy, she was going to try to do something to make it look pretty, and our son was going to look for something to hit with it,
use
it like a hammer, and that there were just things like that. And I guess where I'm going with that is, you know, do we need to have a more sophisticated discussion about just what gender is, that it is beyond physical characteristics? Representative Clare, I'm going to throw that one to you first.
Yeah, absolutely. I you know, I think it's important to point out that the issue of intersex conditions is just one small piece. Mm-hmm. There's a much larger conversation to be had, and I was just hoping that the intersex issue would provide an entry point into that broader conversation, and an entry point that had a lot of basis and research in science and medicine. But absolutely, the conversation needs to happen at a higher level. It needs to be a much broader conversation and recognize not only all of the existing research and understanding regarding gender, but also that there's still a lot we don't know.
We've gotten a Facebook message from a listener named Kelly that I want to pass along, and if you'd like to reach out to us via Facebook, you can do so. Find us at No Limits, WFYI. Kelly says, I am so impressed with the work of Representative Clear. First, syringe access as an important public health tool for reducing the spread of HIV, hepatitis, and now legislation to protect the rights of intersex individuals. Indiana needs more discussion and awareness on these real-life topics. Thanks for your work.
You've got
a fan there,
yes.
Clear.
Thank you.
Well, my guess is you don't always get applause by raising these subjects, so it's probably nice to hear something like that. I mean, have you had to pay a little bit of a political cost for raising subjects like this? As you point out, there wasn't exactly an overwhelming show of enthusiasm for this bill.
Oh, there's definitely a political cost. You know, I try to raise issues such as this not for the sake of the controversy that it's likely to generate, but because it's the type of issue we need to be talking about. And I keep using the word elevate, but I think we really need to look for opportunities, especially when it comes to these very difficult subjects, to frame them in a context that allows us to begin to have a discussion that is going to move us in the direction of resolving the issue. And these are tough topics, but I feel like that these are the topics that most Hoosiers want us to be talking about, regardless of where they stand on the issues. And I'm not talking just about the transgender issue, but I think as the caller's alluding to some other very difficult subjects that people expect us in the legislature to be tackling tough subjects and to be doing it in a constructive fashion.
I've got to ask, I mean, is there any signs that it is working? I mean, we had Senator Holdman on the program just a week ago, and the only word I can think of to describe, you know, his demeanor during that conversation was battered. I mean, he felt like he had just been pounded on. Is there a chance that we can have the kind of conversation you were talking about in a legislative context, not just here, but over?
Oh, I think so, and I think at this point it's inevitable. I don't know, you know, how it will unfold or how quickly it will happen. I expect there will be some additional discussion yet this year, particularly in the House, in the form of amendments that may be proposed to other bills. Going forward, I think the conversation has started, and it's going to continue. There's mm-hmm. there's no way to stop it at this point. The the so-called RFRA fix last year, for the first time, I believe, put the words sexual orientation and gender identity into the Indiana Code. Mm-hmm. And, it certainly wasn't the intent of those who were supporting RFRA.
But
it opened a conversation that will be an ongoing conversation until it's resolved.
Thank you. We are talking about the rights of intersex and transgender children here in Indiana. My guests are Representative Ed Clear, who's a Republican from New Albany, and Melissa Bickle, who is an advocate and mother of a transgender teen. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the rights and protection, civil rights protection, of intersex and transgender children and adults here in Indiana. My guests are Representative Ed Clear, who's a Republican from New Albany, who introduced a bill to protect the rights of intersex children, and Melissa Bickle, who is an advocate and mother of a transgender teen. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what Don has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Don, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for taking my call. I'm speaking out, of course, a lot of ignorance about the subject, so forgive me for that. It seems that the issue might have to do with how we think of transgendered people. Do we think of them as a third gender? And it seems as though the issue of bathrooms and showering, that in this case, a young man physically born as a man but yet identifies as a female, when that process is recognized, then rather than putting them into a third kind of nether category, shouldn't it be that we recognize that that person is in reality a female? So it's not like a boy walking into a girl's bathroom, but it is indeed a female walking into a female's bathroom or shower area. And so the question, it seems to me, is based upon how we view a person. Do we assign them into one of the two genders, or are we saying there is a third gender out there that creates this difficulty with using facilities and other issues?
Good question. Thanks very much for the call and the question. Donna, Representative Clear, I'm going to let you take the first crack at that.
Well, I think I'll go back to the intersex issue for a moment. Again, one of the reasons I thought that it, that it could be provide a good way to start to talk about transgender issues is that, as I understand it, a person with an intersex condition has both male and female characteristics or ambiguous characteristics. And obviously, these people who are among us are using the restroom, and they're choosing one restroom or the other based on their comfort zone and their sense of gender expression, and I haven't heard of any problems. And I think it's the case that people have been using the restroom of their choice, usually without notice or incident, forever. And and the fact is, this goes back to the fear-mongering. I mean, we're talking about these extreme stereotypical examples that I don't think really reflect what's going on already. And I don't live here in Indianapolis, but John or Melissa, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the human rights ordinance that Indianapolis has had on the books for, what, a decade or so, protects gender identity. And that's something that's been talked about in the context of this LGBT debate, is that we haven't heard of a lot of problems.
Yeah, it is it does seem to be a solution desperately in search of a problem here. We've gotten an email that's on point from a listener named Jay. If you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can send it to nolimits@wfyi.org. Jay says, I commend the representative on his enlightened position and his bill. I want to comment that we take showers with people of the same gender at the gym, etc. Many of these people are gay or lesbian. This resistance to the rights of transgender people using facilities is grounded in a fear of sexuality that is as old as society. It will take time, but thanks to people like those on today's panel, our society will grow to include the idea of universal human rights for all. I want to take it away for a second from where we said we wanted to go, away from talking about bathrooms. What are some of the other obstacles, challenges that your daughter faces, Melissa, as a transgender youth?
I think transgenders face discrimination with jobs, with housing. They can be turned away. They can be fired if maybe someone didn't know that they were transgender and then someone outs them. The fears for me, for my daughter, also are just the people, the violence and the hateful things that people say.
Has she encountered any of that thus far?
You know what? We are very fortunate to be surrounded by a lot of support and love, and our community has really embraced her, and her friends are amazing. So yeah, she has had a couple of comments and things at school, and I don't really worry about her there as much, but it's outside of our little comfort area is where I worry about her.
As she enters into the larger world.
Yes, exactly. I don't think there's a time right now where I'm not going to worry about her, but I will say this. I don't worry about her in the way of about herself. I know she's going to be just fine. She's happy. She's happier than I've ever seen her be. She's just amazing.
John, if I could jump in for a moment. I think there's a patriarchal and maybe even misogynistic element to a lot of this beyond the context of restrooms. Talking about the workplace, we have heard a lot about employers who are afraid that a man is going to dress as a woman and somehow hurt business, and we don't hear, at least I haven't heard, about concerns about a woman dressing too much like a man. The concern always seems to be unidirectional. I don't mean to keep going back to the restrooms, but it's sort of like we hear about men and women's restrooms, but not women and men's restrooms. In the same fashion, we hear about men dressing as women in the workplace, but there doesn't seem to be the same level of concern for women dressing as men. And in fact, without naming any names, I think we can all think of restaurants and other settings where the uniforms, actually for both men and women, have a kind of a traditional male appearance. Women servers are wearing neckties and vests and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it seems to kind of go in one direction. And one other comment I might make with respect to the locker rooms and that sort of thing. I know at the YMCA of Southern Indiana, which I've been on the board of until the end of last year. We don't let youth, I believe it's under 14, in either male or female locker room. There's a separate family locker room, and that's a youth protection issue that is neutral with respect to sexual orientation or gender identity. There's a recognition that it may not be appropriate to have young people, in a locker room setting with older teens and adults.
We are talking about the rights of intersex, transgender children and adults here in Indiana. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Rosie has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Rosie, welcome to the program.
Hello. I really appreciate this program and the perspectives that I've heard, and I really wish all of the people well. I do think there's a difference in showers for teens, which was just mentioned by a previous caller, showers rather than restrooms, because I am a retired teacher, and I remember how my junior high showers were, and middle school I know for my daughter who didn't develop well, we're kind of miserable. But here you have a female with an extra body part that I think for as a teacher could just be a nightmare. Now, maybe shower rooms are different, as was mentioned earlier, but I just wanted to say that I think the shower issue in junior high and probably high school differs from the restrooms. And I feel perfectly safe and happy to be in a world of differences and don't want to be misunderstood. You know, the person that you reported was resentful because the school system provided a separate shower area. That's a very difficult, complex concern, and we'll work it out, I'm sure.
Okay. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you, John.
Certainly,
really
thank you.
I appreciate all your topics.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So, I mean, what they're saying is in terms of adolescent development there, mm-hmm. that there could be some confusion and that that might be intimidating. Melissa, Representative Clear, either one of you care to comment?
I think, again, there's a broader issue, and that is that, you know, maybe the way we've done things in the past hasn't really been appropriate for any child in terms of adequate privacy and that sort of thing. And, you know, as we talk about school construction and construction of other public facilities going forward, I think there's going to be more sensitivity to developmental issues and appropriate levels of privacy. I would defer to child psychologists and other appropriate professionals, but I think all children, all youth, need a level of privacy without respect to gender identity or sexual orientation, and I think we're recognizing that more and more, and that hopefully will be reflected in design going forward.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Janet. If you would like to send us an email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Janet says, your guest is a member of the political party that has shown the most resistance to this issue. I think she's referring to you, Representative Clare.
I'm guessing so.
Not me.
do you see a realistic chance of your bill getting a hearing ever within the current state of the Indiana Republican Party?
Yes. Not this year. You know, the way the process works, this is a so-called short session. So the session is about halfway over now, and any bill that that hasn't passed out of its house of origin and moved to the other chamber is dead for this session. But I think there's a lot more interest in these issues among folks on both sides of the aisle. And, you know, I think we saw this with the marriage amendment. There were many legislators on my side of the aisle who changed their position on the marriage amendment, and I think we'll see the same sort of thing happen with gender issues. And as with the marriage amendment, a lot of it is probably going to be about personal experience and personal acquaintances and relationships and getting to know people who mm-hmm. are transgender and realizing that there's really no threat.
Exactly.
We are talking about the rights of intersex transgender children here on No Limits. Eric, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I wanted to share a quick story about an experience I had and then ask the callers to reflect. I was a summer camp director at a summer camp where we hired a transgender counselor. And we had to address the fears of campers' parents. We did so by thinking about the kind of values, rules, and tools we already had at our disposal to address some of their fears. They were, you know, that bathroom concern came up. You know, I don't want a physically male person to see my physically female child in the bathroom. And we took a step back and said, well, you know, something here we value at our camp is that, you know, it's never appropriate for an adult to see a child naked, and they should not be in a bathroom unless there is an emergency. And I think there are parallels to sort of that rule and that value in kind of broader society outside of the summer camp. You know, for example, if anyone with malicious intent enters a bathroom to, you know, hurt somebody or to be a predator, you know, there are harassment laws, there are trespassing laws that can be used as a tool to kind of address this fear and this misinformation and misperception. And I wonder if Representative Clay or Ms. Bickle would have other, you know, kind of societal rules or tools like that that they can think of that might be appropriate to help people think more clearly about this. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Thanks for the call. Melissa, I'll give you first.
Okay. I like that analogy. Because honestly, there's zero 0% incidences of transgender folks harming someone in the bathroom. As far as ideas, that's something I'd like to think about, ideas to get folks to really see transgender people as people that just want to go to the bathroom. So thank you for being thoughtful.
Yeah, all I would say is that I think the issue of youth protection has become a much more prominent issue for a lot of unfortunate reasons. But it's good that the youth protection is a priority now for organizations that deal with youth. And I think most youth protection models that I've seen have safeguards in place. You know, as the caller suggested, for example, it's never appropriate for an adult to be in a situation where they're seeing a child without clothes. And that, I think, is at this point a fundamental part of any youth protection training, whether it be for a church youth group or scouts or, youth sports or whatever. And if we follow youth protection guidelines, I think a lot of these gender-specific issues transgender and sexual orientation issues aren't really relevant.
We've gotten a Facebook message from a listener named Rosalie, directed to you. Representative Clare wants to know if you're going to reintroduce the bill and perhaps broaden it next year.
I don't know about the specific bill. I certainly plan to continue to try to advance discussion about gender issues, transgender issues. I'm very interested in the LGBT civil rights protection issue, and as I said earlier, it's not going away, and I hope to continue to be a part of that discussion and to continue to introduce legislation that helps move the discussion forward.
Thank you, Representative Clare.
I'm going to ask both of you to do something because we have run out of time here, and we've got a huge backlog of questions and all of that. I'm going to ask our listeners to go to our Facebook page, and I would ask if the two of you would be willing to continue the conversation there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you very Absolutely. Much.
Thank this you so
been,
much.
This
Thanks
has
for
been
us.
An enlightening conversation. I'm grateful.
I appreciate
to
the
both
discussion.
Representative Clare and Melissa Bickle. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.